Mark Sprague grew up in the mountains of Wyoming. Horses were his constant companions. Here's Sprague with an excerpt from his memoir, Where Rivers Change Directions.
I knew the horses as I knew my family. When I was separated from them, I felt wrong in the world. When I was separated from them, I took no comfort in the sound of the creek. I felt chilled without the heat of them. In the short lulls between rides, I leaned against the corrals, watching them roll like some captured pod of smallish whales, multicolored, snorting at their handicapped buoyancy. When I stepped in among them, they would turn to me, roll their eyes until the white showed, flick their ears. They were used to the sight and sound of me. I was the boy who straddled their hearts.
Mark Sprague grew up on Holm Lodge, the oldest dude ranch in Wyoming. He told Steve Paulson that just a few decades ago, life in the American West was very different from what we all take for granted today.
When we first moved to Holm Lodge, it was on a generator. It took the first year to get hooked up to the Rural Electric Association. No television reception, no radio reception. We were too far back in the mountains. 20-mile ride to a one-room schoolhouse. There were all of four kids in the upper 25 miles of the Wapiti Valley. And surrounded, firmly, 20 miles inside the Shoshone National Forest, which is adjacent to Yellowstone National Park and the other national forests that surround the park. So there were 12 million square miles of wilderness area.
And to put this in perspective, this was the 60s that we're talking about. I mean, there was a lot of stuff happening out there in the world, but you were really cut off from all of that.
It was a monster shock to me when I went to college in 1970 and found the Beatles and the certainly I knew about the Vietnam War, but hadn't seen it broadcast on television every night, and grew up more a student of history and literature. My dad had a fine library of a lot of history, a lot of philosophy, some good novels. So from the time we were 8 years old, he would assign a book every month. And they weren't easy reading. They were Rousseau, Kant, Kierkegaard.
Wow. So from the time you were 8 years old?
Yeah. And we were required to read one every month. And then after dinner, we would stand at the far end of the dining table and give him an oral report on the book. The written report was due the week after that.
Well, you write about how the environment that you grew up in really didn't put too much stock in childhood, this protected, innocent little time of one's life. I mean, you were being groomed from very early on to be a man.
Children, quite frankly, weren't very useful. Childhood was seen largely as an apprenticeship, I think. We had to contribute with whatever work we felt comfortable and capable of doing.
So what did you do? What kinds of tasks were you put to?
Well, I lived in the bunkhouse with the older cowboys, who seemed very old to me at the time. They were men in their late 40s to late 50s.
And how old were you?
I started when I was 11.
What did they think of you, this little kid?
Well, one of my favorite old cowboys that raised me called me Little Man, which should be indicative of what he expected of me, that I was a smallish man or a man in training, as it were. And to grow up and try to do as many tasks as I could around the ranch. When I say they were democratic, they really did not care whether you were short, tall, fat, thin, female, male. They did care that you kept your word, that you got up early, that you worked late, and that you could be counted upon.
And this was a dude ranch that your father ran. So people from all over the place would come and you would take them out into the hills to see the mountains.
People from around the world. That was the only thing that really probably completely mitigated the isolation in which I grew up. We had people largely from Europe, occasionally from South America, from both coasts of this country, the Midwest, the South. What was lovely to see, and I find that now as an adult, I'm very comfortable with almost anyone, because we would take up to 30 or 40 people into the mountains for up to 3 weeks. They would not see another human being or road or a power line. And you watch them all sort of deconstruct into just a primary man and a primary woman. And some of them were enormously kind. Some of them were wonderfully helpful. Some of them were selfish, but not very many of them. And it allowed me to grow up with the notion that we're all pretty primarily the same, regardless of whether we're a judge from Connecticut or a farmer from Iowa.
Well, you write about how you and your brother, I think you were 15, your brother a year younger, would lead some of these trips yourselves for days at a time. I mean, here you were, I mean, leading out a lot of people a lot older than you, and it was just the two of you, these teenagers.
Yeah, we felt very comfortable doing it, but I've thought about it as an adult, and I can only imagine the terror that must have run through some of those young fathers to be standing there in the tack shed with perhaps their small children who weren't that much younger than my brother and myself and his wife. And here's these two children that are about to take him out into the wilderness for 2 weeks, slipping a carbine in the saddle scabbard in case of grizzly bears and that sort of thing. It must have been terrifying for them. It wasn't for us. I do know that when we brought them back safely, we always got a big tip. They were very appreciative.
So you felt totally confident about your ability to survive, not only survive, but to look after all these people when you were out in the mountains on horseback.
Yeah, I did. My only anxiety was that I might disappoint my father, that if something happened, if a horse went down in a river and someone were to get hurt or even killed, that actually it was more frightening to me in that I might kill someone that I would have to come home and tell my father that that I had failed and that the business was about to suffer in dramatic ways.
Well, and there are some poignant moments that you write about. For instance, there was one time you noticed that the horse that you were on seemed a little off, but you still took that horse out and it almost didn't make it on the way back.
That was bad judgment on my part. And there again, wanting to prove to be a man, and in fact, by doing that, acting more childish than anyone.
So what happened?
Had I been completely mature, I would have known that that horse was too ill to carry on. We had a 30-mile ride over the Continental Divide to get back to the lodge, and the horse could not make it and got very ill. It was very perilous. We thought he might die, and I was required to spend the night with him while the rest of the pack string went on to the lodge, and I brought him in the next day.
So in the end, you walked the horse back to the ranch?
Yeah, I did. There was about 12 miles left, and I walked him in, weeping, I must admit, for a large part of the journey because I felt I'd been set back. I felt that I wasn't progressing toward the grown-up world, that I was falling away from it again.
Did you ever have to shoot a horse?
Yeah, a couple of times. There's one specific incident where I had to shoot a horse that was very dear to me. It was a horse that I had ridden every summer for several years, and he had been badly wire cut. And I think I was 15 at the time, and certainly my father would have shouldered that for me, but he couldn't be there that day. Certainly I suffered doing it, but it was better that I suffer for a day than that horse suffer interminably in its pain and confusion. In a business in which I grew up, you took care of all of the animals before you took care of yourself. Even after, say, the 30-mile ride over the Continental Divide in and into the lodge, and some of it in atrocious weather where your hands were stiffened to the point where you couldn't close them into fists and you were soaked through when you got in, you made sure that all the horses, if there were 80 or 90 or 100 of them, were well cared for before you took any sort of break for yourself.
You also write about some harrowing experiences. There was a time when you were 13 and you were out with an older guy hunting elk, and he ended up slicing his hand quite badly, and he really needed your help.
Yeah. You know, in writing about these incidents, what seems harrowing, I mean, we worked with over 100 horses. We worked a good long way from town. My mother had been a nurse. I've had over 200 stitches, and she gave me most of them before I was 20 years old because going to town was too much of a waste of the day. And so we were accustomed to people getting hurt.
What happened to this guy?
He had a very sharp knife and was opening an elk that he had killed on a bad side hill and slipped and nearly severed his smallest finger from his hand and at the meat of his hand, the heel there.
So what did he have you do?
Well, we finished the job cleaning and quartering the elk. And
so even though his finger was dangling there, he wanted to
Well, that was the type of men that I grew up with. You finished the job, whether it was caring for horses or, I mean, had we not gutted that elk and opened it up for the night, it would have spoiled, which would have been the waste of the killing of an animal, which is no small thing. That animal provided us with the protein to get through that winter. But we got back to our camp, and he had a few drinks from a bottle of whiskey he had, and then we had an aerosol can of, I still don't know what it's called. I'm 50 years old, and I still refer to it as purple horse medicine. That was the color of it, and it stained things horribly when you sprayed it on. But I sprayed the hand with that, and I can only imagine how deeply that must have stung and hurt, and then bound the hand up, and he had a very bad night, and we packed up the elk the next morning and rode the 12 miles to the ranch.
Mark Sprague, talking with Steve Paulson. Where Rivers Change Direction is the title of Sprague's memoir. He's also written a novel called The Fruit of Stone.